take a dying man and raise him up to life again? What can heal the wounded soul? What can make us white as snow? What can fill the emptiness? What can mend our brokenness? Brokenness. And mighty, awesome, wonderful is the Holy Cross, where the Lamb laid down his life to lift us from the fall. Mighty is the power of the cross.
Hey everyone, welcome to the April 7th, 2007 edition of the Unofficial Adventures in Odyssey podcast.
Happy Easter!
Happy Easter, Sarah.
He is risen.
Indeed. So what are you up to this weekend?
I am on campus, and at the moment I am peeling eggs to make deviled eggs. So if you hear me make a comment, it's probably why. I'm peeling 25 eggs tonight and then deviling all of them. And fun.
Wow.
And tomorrow we're going to have a little picnic. David O is making homemade salsa right now in his dorm. And I bought a whole bunch of Easter candy, and we're going to have a little bit of a party for people who are stuck on campus on Easter.
Cool.
Yeah. What about you?
Not much, actually. Tomorrow our church is having a bit of a potluck service in the morning. So we'll be meeting at someone's house, and we'll be having our service there. And then we'll...
That is a small church.
Yeah, it's a small church, like 50 people. And then we'll be eating lunch there.
Cool.
Yep. So whenever food is involved, we expect to have a large gathering.
Oh, didn't I tell you I was flying up for that?
Oh, well, you're welcome. Anytime.
Come on, free food, I'm there.
Cool. Well, let's see. How many parts have we split this up into? I think we've had three already, so this will be the fourth part of our interview with David Griffin. Wow.
Yeah. It didn't feel like we talked to him for that long.
Well, the thing is, this guy can talk for hours and hours, right? But it doesn't seem like you're talking for that long. So at the end of the recording, I hit stop, and it's like, whoa, we talked for 3 hours?
Yep. Nice way of calling him talkative there. That was awesome.
Yeah, tactful. Well, let's get on to it. Let's get on with it.
All right.
All right. Our next question is from D. Sheets, who would like to know, how were you chosen for the role of Jack's cab driver in Plan B? How did that come into fruition?
I am curious to that myself. I don't know what brought that about. I certainly have some theories, but I think it was more that perhaps they wanted to throw a little something my way just for old time's sake, and you know, it was just a cab driver. It was like two or three lines. What was interesting to me was that obviously my voice is so specific that I can't disguise it well enough for people to not know that it was me. And
I didn't know it was you.
You didn't?
I don't remember this. I remember Jack taking a cab. I don't remember you or being a cab driver in that scene. In fact, when they asked that question, I was like, he was?
That I just did a fist bump there. I just did a fist bump when you said that. I was like, yes! You know, I know some people did recognize it, and I have a feeling, if my memory serves me correctly, I believe that episode was recorded on September 12th, 2001.
Oh my
and
word.
I remember that the timing of that was very, very odd. I know I was there recording with them on that date, and the big panic was whether or not they were going to be able to fly back home or if they were going to have to rent a car. I remember that that was probably one of the eeriest sessions I ever had, was because there was this such an external thing going on. I mean, if you can think back to 24 hours after September 11th, and kind of where the state of everyone was, and everybody was in this collective shock, and then, you know, to go in and record, and I think, I have no idea why they picked me to do that, but I was very glad they did, and I know it came along at a time in my life when I was, I could use a little boost, and that's where I sort of wonder maybe they kind of heard through the grapevine that I was a little bit down, and, you know, they threw me a little piece. So it was, I don't know how I got picked for that, but I have some theories. But it was an interesting recording session. I remember afterwards we went out to dinner, and that was an experience that was kind of interesting. A lot of the crew were brand new, people that I didn't know. And I think the only person I knew there was Marshall. And even him I didn't know that well because he had come along right at the end of my run. And so, you know, here's all these people. We're going out, and they're kind of like asking me questions like, oh, so what was it like back in the day? And, you know, you're having like 40-year-olds ask you these questions, and you're just like, wow, you know. I feel like I need a cigar or something, you know, like, you know, but meanwhile, there's this heavy, 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 you know, the Twin Towers just came down, and, you know, everybody's kind of, that was a spooky session. That was kind of a weird day.
So essentially, you got a bit of an ego boost there.
It was sort of interesting, like, well, yes and no, it was kind of, it was sort of like being... For the people who hadn't been there in the early run of the series, I was like a historian to them. And it was sort of interesting how much they were picking my brain about, you know, what was, you know, these, some people had never met Hal, which to me, it's like I can't picture that, somebody not knowing him. But then, you know, I guess, you know, he hasn't been on the show in 13 years. And so it was sort of interesting, like I became this historian for these people who, you know, had missed out on so much or wanted to know about the early days. And, you know, I am a guy to ask that. You know, I was there at the first and second episode taping. So it was kind of interesting.
How far in advance did they contact you about doing that particular episode?
That's a good question.
It was far enough in advance that, like, it wasn't like, oh, well, he lives in the area, so we can get
no.
him in case someone can't fly.
No. It was usually I was contacted. There was two different eras, three technically. When they were recording out here, it was usually maybe a week or two in advance. When they started flying back and forth from Colorado, usually there would be at least a month notice. And I think in the Living in the Gray episodes, I even had more notice than that, maybe even like 3 months. I'm trying to think. I think on that one, I was contacted maybe 2 or 3 weeks or something. I really don't remember. It's kind of a blur.
Well, either way, you pulled off a pretty good accent in that episode. I didn't initially recognize your voice. And then as I re-listened to it, I think a couple fans pointed it out. It was like, wait a second. That's Jimmy Barkley.
Yeah, I was, you know, one of the interesting things was as a kid, we never really got the chance to play with our voices the way that the adults certainly did. You know, in the times that I worked with Corey Burton, I mean, sometimes in one episode, he would be 3 or 4 different people. So I had never really had the opportunity to get to try that, and it was a fun experience getting to be another character, you know, some Chicago cab driving. All right, buddy. And kudos to the fans that recognized it. I wish I could disguise my voice a little bit better than that, but it was fun. And I think I have the distinction. Those were the first lines, at least this is what Nathan told me, was that those were the first lines he had written, and I had the distinction of delivering them, so I felt special. I could be wrong on that. Forgive me, Nathan, if I am.
Did you ever miss being able to play other characters? I mean, I know it must have been a lot of fun voicing Jimmy for, what, 10 years, but did you ever miss having the opportunity to play characters like Freddy, Bobby?
Oh, yeah. Jeremy, Mike. I remember there was a... in the old Focus on the Family studio in Pomona, they had their little hallway Odyssey, and they had, you know, up on a board there was like a couple pieces of fan mail, and somebody had written in about the episode Mike Makes Right. And I remember thinking, oh, that's me, you know, oh, cool. And I remember actually when I got Jimmy, I was kind of disappointed. I thought I had somehow done something wrong, that they were now forcing me to do one character. And after like the 10th episode as Jimmy, I seem to recall asking somebody at some point, you know, well, you know, do I get to ever play anybody else again? And, you know, now, of course, I look at it from their perspective. You know, you can't have the same kid popping up as, like, 47 different characters.
Corey Burton.
Yeah. You know? And so I should have been much more flattered that I got Jimmy Barkley, but I seem to, that for some reason, I took offense at it at first. Like, you know, oh, I kind of like doing, you know, I like not knowing what the character is going to be when I show up, and now I know it's going to be Jimmy Barkley. And then, of course, you know, once Jimmy gained this esteem that he gained, you know, then, of course, I sort of felt like kicking myself forever, thinking poorly about it.
One thing, like, about, like, going back to the actors being, like, inexperienced and stuff, the newest actress, the newest kid actress that they have, her name is Kelly. The character she plays is Kelly. And they just interviewed her on the official podcast, and she was, like, she played the younger Sydney Bristow on the ABC's Alias for a while. And I literally had just seen the last season of Alias, which she was in. And I was like, wow. And it's weird to me. And I almost think, like, it seems to me like the characters now tend to be a lot more, mature isn't really the word that I want, but the situations they're in seem to be a lot more mature and a lot more dramatic. Like, you had a lot more, like, just really, like, you, the Barkleys had, yeah, they had a lot of dramatic stuff happen, but it was just like a day in the life.
Yeah.
So it's just, a lot of the stuff now is more, big situations. And I think, to me, it might just, it seems like to me it's because, you know, those were normal kids. These guys are actors, they can do that stuff. But I really liked that, just having somebody be who they were.
Well, I think that it was, I would imagine that, see, that's kind of an interesting thought, that, because I wonder at some point if agents get involved or try to manipulate storylines to get, you know, hey, I gotta, you know, have my kid do something cool. And, you know, that was one thing that we never really had a problem with in my era was, you know, there were no, like, stage mothers or, you know, there wasn't any, like, businessy stuff around us. In fact, I begged my parents for an agent for years, and they refused to do it. No, we don't want you to get into that. No, you know, go have your little Odyssey fun, but no. But Mom, Dad, I think I'm good at this. And, you know, I would imagine for some of the actors that they're bringing in now that this is a show that's been going on for almost 20 years, they have the weight and the gravity to reach out and get talent. And that's a whole different mechanism when you're dealing with kids that are looking at it as a career. And, you know, I don't know if that colors the stories or vice versa, if, you know, now they feel they can do more, but I seem to recall that, at least with the kids that I worked with, it was never really that hard going into some crazy storylines. I know I certainly got my fair share of them.
That's a good thing. I want to ask Nathan about that, actually, now that you've brought that up.
Yeah, that would be kind of interesting, because I know that I remember there was one time where they would ask me to, like, try to cry, and I couldn't do it because of I was too embarrassed or things like that, and I also couldn't make a laugh sound natural because I would just be too embarrassed. And I remember one time Bob Luttrell, who was the engineer, I think, like, everybody had left the room and it was just me and him or something, or I had to do, like, a pickup line or something, and He's like, you know, all right, you know, trying to throw a little laugh in there, and I'm like, you know, but Bob, everybody knows I can't laugh. And he's like, oh yeah, you're the boy that can't cry or laugh. And I'm like, I am the boy that can't cry, you know. You know, none of the kids were like trained. It wasn't that kind of an atmosphere. I probably had the most training, I would think, just because I was involved in a theater. And I think Azure, I mean, I think she got the audition because she was a friend of the Dobsons. Seems to be what I've heard. And some of the other kids, I know that when the original producer went to the lady that I knew, he was like begging her to send kids, you know, anyone, you know, just bring him in. You know, I could see where, you know, and in some of the early episodes, it did sort of seem like just a day in the life of, like, you know, whatever, you know, kids being kids. And now they probably it also has to do with the fact that they've run out of storylines after 20 years. You know? You can only make so many, you know, sodas before it's like, you know, somebody tries to poison you.
Going back to the whole thing about not being able to cry or laugh, I have to ask you about the prodigal Jimmy. In the official guide, it mentions that the last scene in that episode between Jimmy and George was completely ad-libbed. Do you remember how exactly that scene played out?
That's funny. I know that there were a couple times where we would ad-lib. Not usually. Usually things are scripted out pretty well. But Chuck and I had a very unique relationship. It helped having the actor that plays your dad is also the executive producer of the show. That's also probably why they kept me as long as they did, now that I think about it. I don't recall offhand that it was ad-lib, but I do seem to recall that I think I read that in the official guide too, and that wouldn't surprise me in the least if it was, because sometimes, you know, just because they would write a script, actors would have difficulty saying a line a certain way that the way it's written. And, you know, okay, if you needed to change it up, you would, and they would give you that freedom. Sometimes there would be on-the-spot changes. You know, everybody had a pen nearby so that you could cross out your script and, you know, rewrite in the new thing. It probably was ad-libbed. I seem to recall that happening a couple times with him. I would have to say that that if it worked, it was probably due to the nature that he and I were pretty close, and you know, we were able to, you know, just feed off of each other. And there were a lot of instances like that where they would ad-lib.
Well, you certainly pulled it off, because I remember it to be a rather emotional and very touching scene.
Yeah, that's when I gotta listen to them all again. But that one, I think, probably, you know, and sometimes that was the goal, was to ad-lib so that it wasn't feeling as if it was a scripted situation, you know. And, you know, just use what you've got with the two actors that you've got, and they'll bring it out. And, you know, Chuck was always somebody that I felt comfortable enough with to go wherever he would ask me to go, you know. But it was also real cool being directed by them. And, you know, I trusted everybody enough that I never felt like I couldn't, you know, like they were ever going to take me to territory that, you know, was going to scare me or make me feel uncomfortable, you know. So... And Chuck is a wonderful guy to improv with. He liked to keep it real.
Right on. Well, switching gears now. By now, I think most fans, especially those who are members of the Town of Odyssey, would know that you're married to Darcy, who is also a member of said forum.
Indeed.
And Cymbalmean and McNabb would like to know if Darcy is as wonderfully awesome in real life as she is online.
Yes, even more so. She's my best friend. We've been together for almost 10 years, and who she is online, she really is that sweet, and it's almost as if she's made out of pure sugar. It's quite disgusting sometimes.
Cymbalmean would also like to know if you marry Darcy just because her name started with a D.
No, but that played a very large part of it. In fact, I tend to narrow down most of my choices to D&G. Which
then
makes
why does Kimberly start with a K?
Ah, because I didn't marry her. As
Same
long as
with
I'm
the
not...
whole name thing to run in the family.
Yeah, as long as well, her name was she was named after her grandfather. That was a little family tradition that I wanted to continue. My mom was named after her grandfather. I was named after my grandfather. You know, so I kind of wanted to keep it as like a firstborn thing, and it helped that my father-in-law is named Kim.
Well, the cool thing about the D is it kind of reminds me of Bill Kendall's obsession with marrying women with names named after the months.
April, May, June.
Mm-hmm. Soon she'll be on to December.
Wait, he knew that!
Wow!
What other months in the year would be a woman's name? Hey, come here, October. You know?
Augusta would be one for August, mm-hmm. but...
Well, you switch it up a bit. You go to autumn. For
summer.
September, yeah, summer.
And summer.
Fall.
I had a girlfriend named Summer at one point.
Speaking of Kimberly, how many children do you have?
I have one daughter and one on the way.
Yay!
So soon to be two.
And will you, and ITAC wants to know if you will raise your kids on Adventures in Odyssey.
Yeah, I think it's a great show. I think aside from the fact that it, you know, tends to have really good values and teach good lessons to kids. I think one of the most important things about it is that it really exercises the imagination. And that's something that in a day and an age when a lot of media kind of force feeds you and overstimulates you with a lot of visual images and, you know, we get so used to that. The nice thing about Adventures in Odyssey is that it's a very audio sensory experience, and it forces the imagination to expand, and I think that's wonderful for kids. I think we need more things like that.
Good answer. Odyssey fan would like to know, what kind of work are you doing now?
Currently, I've got a screenplay that I've been writing for the last couple months with a friend of mine, and kind of hit a little bump in the road on that one. But it's a little independent project. I just got cast in an independent film with a friend of mine through some friends of his, and it's a little short project. Then I've got what else is on my table? I've always got like a billion different things that I'm working on. I've had this story idea that I've been working on for the last year that I think I'm going to do in book form before I try doing it in any other form first, because it's a huge project, but that's probably going to take me the next 20 years of my life to get out. And then I've got, don't know how much I should say, but there is the possibility that I might be working on developing my own audio series with perhaps somebody that the two people might know.
Interesting there. Interesting.
Yeah. So, well, and especially after Walker's death, I mean, I've been wanting to do something like this for a while anyways, just because I miss it so much. But then when I heard Walker died, it really lit a fire under me to, you know, make sure that this art form gets reinvigorated. And, you know, now that we've got internet access and capabilities like that, we don't necessarily need to rely on just the radio to bring us that kind of entertainment. So it would be, it's always been my dream to do my own series anyways, and yes, something like that is in the works.
Good
and
for you.
Hopefully I will be able to say more soon. So
excellent. Yeah, we'll definitely be looking forward to hearing that once and if it is released. Or sorry, when it is released.
I'm pretty certain I want to. I mean, we got most of our outline going, and we're still trying to. We're butting heads on, you know, what the direction is going to be. But that's part of the fun process of. See, there's a Chuck moment for you. That's part of the fun creative process, and. You know, once we get things narrowed down a little bit more, I hope to, within the next couple months, maybe, have something ready.
Cool.
So, yeah, that's all I can say.
Sweet. Okay, our next question comes from EK. If you weren't an actor, what would you like to be?
I would love to do anything involving travel.
Yay!
I always think I would have enjoyed politics, not so much for the wheeling and dealing side of it, but I think I would have loved working in an embassy or being an ambassador or somebody like that. There's something about that world of meeting different people and having to, you know, work out problems with other cultures and things like that that I would have enjoyed. I would have liked to have maybe been a teacher. I enjoy teaching. I find I have the patience for it, and it's something that I enjoy a lot. I would not want to do anything in the medical field.
You're here.
I'm a little squeamish. I don't like seeing people in pain and suffering. You know, I'm a rather compassionate person, and I like dealing with people, being involved in people, and I think teaching or working in politics would be two areas that would appeal to me.
Wait. But politicians are heartless.
Some are, yes. But and see, I don't know if I would necessarily want to be a senator or an ambassador. I might want to be like one of the people working in the background. I would love to run a campaign. I think that would be fascinating. That would just be the craziest whirlwind job anyone could have. But, you know, yeah, there's, you know, a certain amount of politics that's rather sleazy, but I think there's also a lot of people out there that are, you know, sincerely trying to help or do something good, and unfortunately it's the system that, you know, forces them from the moment that they get elected, they have to start becoming professional fundraisers. But I think, you know, I always imagine the day in the life of somebody working in the White House and all the fascinating people that you would meet and get to brainstorm with and, you know, try and problem solve. There's something about that I sort of, or maybe I just watch too much West Wing.
That would be quite the experience, just as long as you didn't work on Margaret Fay's campaign. Or Bart Rathbone's, for that matter.
Yeah. Oh, Bart Rathbone. Oh.
Why'd you have to put Bart?
I'm sorry.
Little tiny tear. Oh. But yeah, that's probably what I would do. I love the idea of, you know, it's such a big world that I need to see all of it. Hate the idea of knowing that I won't be able to see everything.
Well, that was an enjoyable listen.
Uh-huh.
Like I mentioned at the top of the podcast, Dave could talk for hours, and you're only hearing a segment of it. I cut out a lot of fun extra bits and bytes. And
you know what I realized?
Nope.
That our important question that we teased about last week wasn't in this episode.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too. Oh, well, I guess people will have to tune in next week to listen to it.
And I promise it will be there unless somebody edits it out. So now that I have said this and it already aired last week about the surprise, everybody will know there's supposed to be, well, not really surprise, but cool tidbit of information that answers the question, the meaning of life. At least in my world, anyway. Chris can't edit it out. Ha ha.
See, now you guys know what's really important in Sarah's life.
Not really. It was just the most important question that was asked, that's all. And you admitted it until you found out what the answer was, and it wasn't important to you anymore.
Yeah.
See how these priorities work. But more about that next week.
So, how are the eggs doing?
One just tried to run away from me. They're doing good. I have a lot more. I'm still boiling some more eggs. And my fingers are getting sore at this point. But, oh well. It'll be good. It'll be worth it.
Indeed.
It'll taste yummy. Lots of cholesterol and fat. Yay!
Yum, yum. So, we have 2 more weeks until the premiere of the or should I say semi-premiere, of the second half of the Odyssey season.
Yay! What are we doing next week?
Next week we are airing the final part, or final segment of our interview with Dave Griffin. And
I mean, what about the week after that, before the premiere?
Oh, the week after that, yeah, we are going to be discussing, well, depending on a certain somebody's...
It's a surprise.
Yeah.
Wait, a certain someone's what?
We'll be, we'll be summarizing or recapping some of the highlights from our interview with Dave Griffin, maybe some outtakes here or there. Yeah.
We don't have any outtakes. What are you talking about? Oh. We got it right every time the first try.
No, that's Dave. Dave gets it right on the first take.
No, that was us. Dave was the one that had to have help. You know, you'd think he'd know better considering he's been an actor all his life.
Right.
Apparently not.
Guess not.
We taught him a thing or two. So, next week, final part of our interview, and then a week after that, it's kind of up in the air. Maybe something fun and exciting. Maybe I'll just get stuck with us. Who knows?
Or maybe we won't air at all.
We can't do that. What?
I just realized something.
Yes?
Next week will be our 10th podcast.
Really?
Big number 10.
Wow. We're getting old.
We are. It's been, what, 4 months?
My goodness, it has.
We're getting there.
And this egg just loves its peel so much that the peel's just coming with it. Or the egg is coming with the peel.
Thanks for sharing that, Sarah.
You're welcome.
Well, everybody, thanks for listening.
Thanks, guys.
Hope you enjoyed it.
Happy Easter.
Have a blessed Easter, everyone.
Yay!
See you later.
Bye.
Power of the cross.